Welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. In this podcast, we dig into the exact playbooks that ABM practitioners are using today to get their first ABM program off the ground. We'll dig into how they're using their current tech stack in order to create scrappy programs that rely more on creativity than new technologies. So if you're looking for how to get ABM off the ground in your organization in the next 90 days, let's dive into this episode. Hello and welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. This is your host, Mason Cosby, and today I'm joined by Adam O'Brien, who's the founding marketer at StackPack and co-host of Don't Be a Sass. Adam, thank you so much for joining me today.
Yo, what's good, Mason?
A lot, because I'm getting to hang out with you, and it's probably one of the best meetings that I have all day. So Adam, one, thank you, because you have been a very, very kind client to us and left many testimonials. So we'll get to talk about some of the things that you have done previously, but I always get to enjoy time with Adam on a more frequent basis than all of you. And if you don't know Adam, go follow him on LinkedIn. He's great. Anyway, I want to dig into specifically as we think about building out an ABM program, it always starts with the accounts. Crazy enough, account-based marketing. So I'm curious, as you think about the audiences and the accounts that you prioritize for this program, first, can you give us like a little bit of an overview of like what this program is, like anything that you feel would be relevant for the audience to better understand, and then dig into how do you actually find the audience?
Yeah, I think in the past, it's always started with this, which is good. I mean, so get some good ABM marketer then, is the fact that for me, I'm prime marketing at my core. I'm going digging back through closed loss, closed won deals. I usually do over the last 18 months trailing, so I can get a context of both the historical long tail issues, but then also there's a lot more relevant stuff as you get closer, like the 6 to 3 month closed loss stuff, closed won. That gives you an understanding of a lot of the things of like, hey, where do we find best win, best fit? And for us, previously I was at a tech for good company where we knew that certain nonprofits in a certain digital fundraising donation band. It wasn't everyone, right? There's 1.9 million nonprofits in the US. That's not plausible. So we actually chiseled it down to roughly, I want to say 250 target accounts per rep. We had two to four reps, give or take. And then we had an extended kind of good fit, but not best fit that we also use as tangentially to help target, right? So overall, you think about that's a very, very small percentage, small pie. Led with closed won, closed loss info. It did run with a lot of, 15 to 20 different data points that we had to either manually find or we used a couple different tools to source. And then also a inspirational kind of side guidelines. Where do we want to go and how do we want to start testing that? So that kind of is a smaller subset of that, but that formed the core of how we figured out where to go.
I'm going to nerd out for a second because when we were talking about the idea of working together, you actually shared, we like have already segmented by this data and this source and this source and this source. Because I was actually concerned of like, is this even a good fit for ABM? Because you sold in the nonprofit space. And I was like, nonprofit by its definition, hard to go after your most profitable customers. But as we dug into it, it was really interesting the way that you use publicly accessible information because they are nonprofits to just like discern, this is how much money we'd probably make off of them because it was a transacting percentage. So super, super insightful, just the way in which you went and manually sourced and actually dug in and found really, really great information that also gave your reps really good reasons to reach out. So as we think through that, I'm always curious, once you've actually found that audience, how do you get in front of them? What was the channel mix that you ended up using to engage like a really small subset of accounts?
Yeah. I think it went into the pre-work to understand what we call mission sub-verticals. And this could be verticals for anyone listening, right? And whether it be like education, certain types of business. For us, it was faith-based missions, food banks, world relief, aid, as well as private higher ed. We knew we had, for whatever reason, dead to right wins. We won often in there. It's a lot to do with the competition we went up against and knowing our product features and how they could be leveraged to go against who we were running up against, right? From there, I used a few tools to understand, one, contextually, what messaging would resonate more effectively with our target personas, which were, primary users were marketers. Easy enough. I'm a marketer. Cool. Got that. But then you have different functions within a nonprofit space. You think about advancement teams. You think about major gifts teams, tangential buying groups for IT and finance as well. They're involved because it does involve money, right? Donations. Best deals get done in person. I think that's across the board right now. So we made the intent and decision to hunt down where these target accounts were going to show up organizationally wise, at trade shows, at conferences. We didn't actually have the money to go sponsor all these. So what we did is we ran small, intimate little dinners, just kind of hijacked the audience. It worked really well. It proved to be one of the most effective ways for us to build pipeline in a very, very tough climate in 2025. And really it was 2024 as well. Between that and then our website, those were our two primary channels. We didn't see any success with ads. We killed that pretty quick, right? But the in-person stuff, relationships are built. The nonprofit space is incredibly relational, as are humans in general. So we went hard with that. And, you know, we followed up and we used things like Sendoso to help with, you know, the post-event activations. We did see a subset of that, the digital events also really, really crush it. But we ran ours different. We ran them as if they were a physical event as much as we could. So instead of preaching, we actually invited people to interact with us. We did teardowns or glow-ups, as we like to call it, where we actually went through people's donation pages in real time, gave them feedback. Hey, here's how to help. And we did that on a fairly consistent basis. So we built up this reputation of they're here to help, not tear down, but they're also giving value. And granted, we were, yeah, in the concept of that, we're also doing a kind of a subconscious product pitch, but we had to build a brand on the fly in addition to reach our target markets. And that was the key ways that we did it.
I really love the, like, yes, ads are more scalable and that's helpful and yada, yada, yada. But like at the end of the day, the goal is not actually significant, massive scale. It's intentional relationship development with specific accounts. So it sounds like what you did was a lot of fostering of specific relationships. And I don't know if we've ever talked about this. One of the most successful ABM programs that I ran at a former agency was literally a webinar called Fix Your Site, where like people did website submissions and then we did live, and we called them teardowns because we were aggressive, but like we did live website teardowns. But then we followed up with actually personalized website reviews for every website that submitted. And like that thing cranked because it was personalized and specific, but also got intent from the individual to say like, hey, I want you to actually like review my stuff. And it fostered quite a bit of a little community around it. So I always love that play that fosters community brand, but is intentional to foster community and brand within the accounts that we want to actually like hang out with.
Exactly. And we knew going in that just blasting them with stats and saying you should switch to us because wasn't going to work. And to that point, we did a similar play too. We took the glow up concept and move it to emails, where we did the legwork and we actually wrote long emails that outlined their specific donation pages, where they can convert. We actually grabbed the percentage points they could lift and calculated how much more they could be earning. And this was actually sans a product. This was just straight best practices. And granted, they couldn't do it without a tool like ours, but that was the soft sell, right? And that was by easily the easiest, most responsed to campaign or set of campaigns that we ran, but also we knew our audience. We took the time to understand the pain points of like underwhelmed, overwhelmed, understaffed, under-resourced, maybe sometimes not the most technical resource available. So like we had to make it easy, and that was a layup as much as it could be.
So you've already alluded to some of these different content assets that you were developing, but I'm always curious, your distribution is only as effective as the destination you actually send people to. So as you're thinking about the destination content, like what assets did you create that actually created an engaging experience?
We started with an ebook to test. That actually was responded to really well. It was a top of funnel educational piece. But then I got to thinking, geez, this thing is 30 pages long. No one's going to read this. I don't want to read it. And I wrote it. So actually, we flipped it into an exploratory chat custom GPT, where I threw it in there, trained it, did a couple of things on the voice and the way I wanted to respond and interact, and set it loose into the wild, right? I had no idea if people would interact with it, but like I hadn't seen anyone do this with their content. All it is just a GPT of the ebook, right? Next thing I know, it's taken off, getting a lot of good feedback. So we started building out more and more of these like very niche specific problem focused GPTs and using them in my digital, like, you know, dropping the digital events I talk about and say, hey, this isn't just a bunch of junk. Like, go try it. And people would try it right then and there and give feedback. It was great. Also, we had like 9 or 10 of these. So we decided to make a microsite on our page, call it ID Labs, because we're very big into optimization at that point. We wanted to go with the branding, and I just wanted neon colors, to be honest. That's the whole thing here. Where it lists out everything related to donation page optimization. It had all direct links to GPTs, our ebook, everything ungated, of course. And that outperformed our blog by 4 or 5x within about 2 months, easy, which is great to see. But that became the single point of where we were now using that as a place to funnel everyone in our outbound efforts, all of our post-event follow-ups, put people there. We added in Vector specifically to track who was showing up on that page with the contact level ID. And then we have Zoom Info running workflows for us that will automatically parse out the information and like the intent signals from our target accounts that end up falling into that website. So like all of a sudden we've got this like really lean, granted Zoom Info is not cheap, but I inherited that. So thank you. It's a really cool, quick workflow that more effectively told us when target account, but allowed me then to guide our reps to those accounts and save them the time from wasting potentially on just prospecting needlessly. I think which was the biggest win out of all of that is the prioritization, and it kept the reps happy with me in terms of, hey, do this, don't do that.
I love it. How'd you guys end up measuring success?
Part of it was we had no idea what to expect out of these. So I think for me, it was twofold. It was tracking how many times the GPT specifically were used. You could do that. If you create yours, you can actually see it in the store 100 plus times. The reviews, that's like superficial, right? That just lets me know people are using it. What I was looking at specifically though is how much of the high intent conversions on the website were going up, if any, how much pipeline was created, if any, and then starting to loosely correlate that. Because we know that attribution can be a bit of a wizardry game sometimes. But I could make a strong point of, hey, if I put resources and effort into this, and that's where we're driving people, there should be a correlating run, right? And we saw most of the pipeline build through Q1 and Q2 of 2025, about 80% was attributed to marketing, which is not shabby. When I got on board about a year prior, it was done, right? So it was a lot of work. Now, that's leading indicators. So, you know, I think the team still needs some TBD on closing that stuff now that I'm out of there. But that gives you a concept of like, I'm thinking both, yes, is people consuming this? That's kind of those more vanity metrics, but still important. Initial, middle is conversions, and then funnel close one down the line is kind of the three-stage tracking there.
I think the thing that I want to specifically highlight is previously 0% marketing source pipeline. Today, 80% source marketing pipeline or marketing source pipeline. Not bad.
The goal is what, 70-30 split typically for most SaaS orgs, depending on your business movement. So like one of the very few places that I've been able to realize that marketing split, thankfully. But also there's some of it of like, we knew where to go to meet our potential buyers. And we leaned to that very quickly. So
as you think about unexpected challenges that popped up, like obviously ABM isn't easy, especially when you're resource strapped and like, yeah, I don't think we've made this clear enough. Like you were a solo marketer through this, and obviously you had some agency support, but I mean, at the end of the day, like you're a guy that's like got an agency. What were the challenges that were not expected that popped up along the way?
The biggest thing was we were swimming in a red ocean. And for those unfamiliar with that, it's that the market was so crowded. We're talking about 10, 30, maybe even 40 different online donation vendors in the space. Some heavy hitters, one or 3 to 4 heavy hitters. We're in that second tier is where I would on Microsoft humbly, where you know you don't quite always have the juice to compete with the big kids. And you don't always win the battles in the middle, but you can go pick on the lower tier. With that comes a lot of issues, right? You don't quite have the technology to really find that one thing that makes you unique, or the one thing you think is unique, no one actually cares about, which was kind of the case with our testing, like in platform, right? Unbounce does it. If like landing page, you know, they do it. I loved it. But we just found that, hey, you know, we inherited a platform that had some features that you know, weren't as market shaking as we hoped. So there's twofold to that. One is, you know, you can't ABM yourself if you don't have the product market fit. I'm not saying that we didn't, but also like kind of didn't to some extent because there was nothing clearly defining. Now, at the end of my tenure, we got some new stuff out. that we launched, which should hopefully change that for the team. I'm excited. That's one. And we've texted about this too, Mason, of like, you can't message a bad product or a product that isn't differentiating, right? The other half is the messaging. Like, it was an evolving thing of like, how in the world do we position this thing in a way that cuts through? And we knew we had content market fit, dead to rights. Like, people showed up for our content, our webinars, our, and everything. So we knew we had that, but it was really the challenge of how do we make that step to convert from what I would say surface level interest into like product level interest. And again, maybe that goes back to probably the fact that, hey, it's a crowded market and we just didn't have the features to get us across the market. A lot of those conversations, those are the two big things that like kind of knew, but came very clear in taking that with me now as I'm on the stack pack.
I appreciate the honesty. It's a conversation I have often, which is the goal of ABM is to go get more of your best customers. In order to do that, you have to have clear established product market fit so you know what best customer is. I mean, it's tough when there's not a clearly identifiable, this is exactly who we best serve and here are all the reasons why.
Yeah, I think I underestimated the value of customer quotes or customer reviews or customer referrals to, right? Case studies. Like, we revamped our case studies, so they technically are well written, but the lack of fresh stories to tell really, I feel like, hurt us too. And it's no fault of my own or the sales teams, right? And that's just probably the outlier to a product that needed to get revamped to a large extent. I do firmly believe if we had the features that we got right as I left, and as well as the new wave of quotes and case studies, probably would have looked a lot different. Probably a lot less gray hair for me.
We laugh for the pain. So last thing I just want to ask you is just any parting wisdom. Like, you've built ABM a couple of times, and obviously you just shared a little bit, but is there anything else that if you were building ABM for the first time, you wish you would have known before getting into it?
Yeah, I think unexpectedly, my DNA as a product marketer, first and foremost, was probably the most accelerating thing that I could have done unintentionally, not knowing, to stand ABM upright, because I had already rebuilt our target market from the ground up. I'd already rebuilt our personas from the ground up. I understood backwards and forwards, side to side, everything that a core product marketer should be able to do. But what that did is allow me to then springboard and accelerate into the more strategy / tactics of the ABM program and not have to effectively spend 6 weeks rebuilding all this from scratch or rebuilding it. That was the nicest thing to have. So if you're not a product marketer who also does ABM stuff, like, go buddy up with your product marketer, tell them, hey, I want the core stuff, and then go run. From that, like, ABM is kind of synonymous now with standard marketing the way it should be done, in my opinion. Which means you don't have to go run ads. Don't do it. Actually, don't do it if you don't have true like product market fit and messaging fit too. But there's other ways to get crafty. And some of that involves getting out, talking to people, listening to call recordings. You'll get some of the best nuggets that you flip around into breaking into accounts with stuff that you already have. You don't have to go spend to figure it out. That's also what you learn as a scrappy single marketer, solo marketer, founding marketer, where you don't have resources, so you got to make do with what you got.
Yeah, scrappy, good marketing didn't quite have the same ring to it. But yeah, I think if you are running an account-based program, you've just done the intentional upfront work to actually clarify, this is who we want to go after, and let's go build programs to go get those people, which is really just good marketing. So, Adam, I really couldn't agree more. Thank you so much for joining me today. If people want to find out more about you, where'd you point them?
Go to LinkedIn. I'm chronically on there, probably making some snarky remarks or talking about sneakers out of context on business posts. So that is the place to be. You can also find me probably over at stackpack.co is where I'm hanging out now, helping that team do some incredible things with cost reduction from a vendor standpoint, using AI and all the cool stuff that goes with it.
Adam, thank you so much for joining me today. This has been Scrappy ABM, and we'll see you guys in the next one. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Scrappy ABM. If you're looking for more content just like this, I highly recommend you go subscribe to our newsletter. We release weekly playbooks so that you have the actionable ways in which you can start to build an ABM program today. Just go to scrappyabm.com/newsletter to subscribe. And if you enjoyed this episode, we'd really appreciate if you'd leave a 5-star review and hit the notification bell so you never miss an episode. I look forward to seeing you in the next one.